This is an interview with Florence Miller conducted on November 30th, 1997 by Matt Owens in Lexington, Indiana.
I hope it's working. I'll set it up here. Maybe it'll fall over. All right. I'll just start with the first basic question. Where was it that you taught?
I taught at Lexington Elementary School. It was when I started teaching it, we had all 12 grades.
Here at the school here, all 12 grades?
Uh-huh.
What years did you teach?
My first year I taught was in 32 and 33. Mm-hmm. And I had the sixth grade that year. First year I taught, I had the sixth grade over here.
So what year did you retire? What year did you retire from teaching?
In 77.
In 77? Was sixth grade the only level that you taught? Or?
Oh, no. The sixth grade was the first year I ever taught. And after that, we had politics entered in. And I had to lay out a year because of politics. He had promised the school to his niece, Miss LaVon Shields. She, at that time, was teaching in Blotcher. So I had to lay out, and she taught. And then while I was off, there was a lady that was teaching in Alpha, and she had a nervous breakdown. And so the trustee there came, Mr. Shea, came and asked me if I would finish out the year and had all eight grades at Alpha.
At once?
Yep. And the day that we went up, my husband then took me up to get me a room to stay up there through the week while I taught. And then he was to come and get me on Friday and bring me home on the weekend and then go back on a Monday. And the day that we went to get a place to stay, when we came back, why, at that time, his mother and dad, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, had a restaurant right up here on the corner where the station is now. And we had gone in there to tell them about where I got to stay and get some groceries to take up home. And while we were in there, John Kerner and Nav came in the store and said, "Carl, your house is on fire." And the house burned down that very day.
Oh,
I didn't realize that you taught at Alpha. Now, that was a one-room schoolhouse, wasn't it?
Yes, I had awful sweet kids out there. There's wonderful kids out there.
Well, now, what year was that then, 30?
That was in 32, 33, about 34.
Well, I swear.
What was a typical day like during your teaching career? I mean, what were like the daily rituals that you went through?
Oh, daily rituals. Well, first of all, of course you had to take the attendance, see who was there, who wasn't, and give the kids a nice greeting and make them know that you were happy that they had come to school. And you always encourage perfect attendance, you know, for being there every day was very important. And then after you saw to that, well, of course you had to take up the lunch money and the milk money and take care of that. And then after that, as soon as we got through with the lunch money and the milk money, we always started every morning with singing.
Singing?
Because I always told the kids, I said, when you're singing a song, you can't be mad at anybody.
That's true.
And Miss Florence, she writes songs still. She's had some published.
Oh, you write songs too?
Yes. And we, then as soon as we had sung, while we were reading, we took reading, and then we had the math, and then we had English and the subjects that way, you know. Sometimes we had them a little different because of maybe the playground, when you had to go on the playground. But at that time, we were with our children from the time we went to school till school was out. We also went with them through the lunch hour. We took them down through when I was first teaching, why we didn't have a cafeteria like they have now, a space like we have now. They just had the cafeteria where they cooked the food. And you had to take your trays, go down and get your trays and bring them back up to the classroom. And you ate your lunch in the classroom. And when you were all finished, you took your trays back. And then you went on out to the playground for the noon hour. And I'll tell you one humorous story. I always, if they wanted to, whoever wanted to, could say grace before we ate. Mm-hmm. And the children really enjoyed that. And I had one little girl, Martha Jo Schaefer, that was Catholic, and most everybody in the school was Protestant. And there were very few Catholics in the school. And so she told me then, after several days, she said, that Miss Florence, she said, I'd like to say the grace today. And I said, well, that'd be fine, Martha Jo. So she started in, and she said the Lord's Prayer. And she said, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Well, the kids all sat there and held their breath. Directly, a little boy named Tater, great big blue eyes, got up and said, Miss Florence, as smart as Martha Jo is, it wouldn't take her any time to learn the rest of that.
You said you taught in some one-room schoolhouses, and let's get closer here. You taught in a one-room schoolhouse, and you also taught here in a town. What was about the average number of students you'd have in a class?
Well, when we started out, we had big rooms. Oh, we had, at one time I had 48 third graders, and always had 35 or 36, and up until the later years when they began to think, well, that was too many students. And the latter years, in 73 and 74 and 75, they began to, they got two teachers for the grade, you see. We started out, we just had one teacher for grade 3 and one teacher for grade 1 and so on. But later on, they wanted two teachers for one grade. And so that cut down on the students that you had. But that year that I had 49, Buddy Clapp was the main one we had in politics here that helped us with our school. And he came over and he said, he had been one of my students, and he said, Miss Florence said, you've got such a big class that we think maybe we just better get another teacher and not have such a big load. And I looked around at my children, and I went over to him in private, and I said, Buddy, I said, if you take any of these kids away from me, it'd break my heart.
Yeah. So, which way did you liked it better than with the bigger class?
I did.
You did?
I liked it better.
So that would have been your ideal size, probably 35 kids?
Around that many.
Okay. A big thing now in teaching is like a technology with all the computers and everything. What did you use when you taught? I mean, like movies or film strips?
Well, I used Blackboard.
Blackboard? Was that about all you had, being in a rural school like this?
That's the main thing we had, was a blackboard. I let the children use a blackboard. They love to go up to the blackboard, too, and demonstrate to the rest of the kids.
What did you do for papers, like if you had papers to pass out?
Oh, yes, we had papers to pass out. That was after they got the, where you ran them off, you know, where they ran them off for you and all. But of course, we had, at first, we just used our textbooks and our tablets and our pencils.
And we just copy out of the books?
And copy out of the books or write down our answers, what they wanted.
Okay. Are there any students in particular that you remember for good or bad reasons that just stick out in your mind?
I have a thousand to remember for good reasons. A thousand. All my children were just wonderful children. They just had one or two that kind of gave you some trouble, a little trouble, but it wasn't anything serious. it wasn't anything serious at all. But I had one boy. He was so large for his age. He was as big as I was when he was in the third grade. We were out on the playground, and he came up and said, "Miss Florence, I want to take you for a ride on the merry-go-round." I said, "Oh, now, Delmar," I said, "I don't want to ride on the merry-go-round." I said, "I'm talking here," and I said, "You go on out and play." Well, he didn't go. He came back, and, "Miss Florence, I want to take you for a ride on the merry-go-round." I said, "Oh, no," I said, "I don't feel like riding on the merry-go-round." "Oh, now, Miss Florence, come on. I just want to take you for a ride on the merry-go-round." Well, finally, like a big fool, I gave in to him. And I went down, and when I sat down on the merry-go-round, I was the only one on it. The kids were out playing ball and doing other things. But I hadn't any more than got down on the merry-go-round until that merry-go-round was full. They just came from all around, where they were on the monkey bars and the teeter-totters, filled up that merry-go-round, and he was big and strong, and he started out pushing that merry-go-round. And I never sat where you sit in and put your feet on the inside and hold on. I just sat on with my back to it, you know. And when we went around the third time, he brought me around, and I flew off in space, and there I sat, lay with the feet going right by my face. We're going to where their feet were going. I thought, "Oh my goodness, I'm bound for the hospital," but I survived it. And another time, we got the new slides. We got the playground equipment. We got the new slides, and that one was really high. Well, it was so high that they'd taken it away because it was dangerous, really dangerous. One little girl, Betty Brown, fell off of it, broke her back. Oh. So a lot of kids had fallen off of it, so they finally taken it away. Well, when it first came, another teacher said, "I dare you to go down the slide." And so I should have passed up that dare too, but it didn't. And I had on a skirt that fit kind of tight. And boy, I tell you what, I whizzed down that slide and got to the bottom, and I think I ran halfway through the schoolyard before it could get stopped. When I got back up to the room, all the kids were sitting there, and they were just as still as they could be. And directly one of them said, "Miss Florence," said, "you went down that slide pretty fast." Said, "you went down faster than anybody." But that was my first and last trip.
No more trips down the slide after that? What were the classroom itself that you taught in, what was it generally like? What did it look like as far as decoration and everything?
Well, before school started, Mrs. Rentschler and I, Miss Mabel and I, we always got together, and we always worked with art, did artwork to decorate our rooms with. We went in and we cleaned them. We washed woodwork. We washed windows. We washed our blackboards. And then we made beautiful murals that we put up on the wall, and made our classrooms as attractive as we could make them, because we wanted a beautiful room for the children to be in. And they always appreciated that a lot. And then when the children did their artwork, we always displayed it, because they wanted to see their work up there and wanted other people to see it. And admire it. And if their parents came, they wanted their parents to see the things that they had done. And when they had especially done something really beautiful, or did some real good math or English or whatever, if they felt real proud of what they had done, why, we had that on display. So our rooms were always made very beautiful.
Did you have to maintain the upkeep on your room? Did you have to do all the cleaning and everything like that yourself?
Or? No, we had a custodian, but there's only one man, one custodian for the building. And you know how much hard work it would be.
A lot of work.
So we tried our best to keep the room as clean and neat as we could. And the children even enjoyed, they scrubbed on it some, you know. We cleaned and scrubbed. The children would do that at recess time or noon hour when it was rainy and bad and you couldn't get outside.
I don't know if you could get kids to do that today. It's hard enough to get me to clean my room. But when did you feel successful as a teacher?
When did I feel successful?
Yeah. Like you've really accomplished.
When I saw a child enjoying school.
Did you ever have any students go on to be doctors or lawyers? Or?
Yes. I got a lawyer here in Scott County now. He's in my class. Don Bonsett. Yeah. Don Bonsett. He's a judge, James Klepper.
Oh, Jimmy Klepper.
Jimmy Klepper. Uh-huh. And Don Bonsett, he was one of my students. He was a judge. And I can't tell you how many turned out to be teachers. And I'm awful proud of Bobby over there because he's a good, successful businessman and a fine student, a fine husband and father. And I think that's what life's all about, being a good wife or a good husband and a good father and a good mother. That's what life is all about.
It's pretty good advice. Do you think that, did you ever give this kind of advice to your students, talk about just life in general? I mean, not so much academic subjects, but just talk to them about how to be good people?
Every day.
Every day. Do you think that you, or can you remember a student or a time where you really had an impact on their life, you think, by teaching them such good morals?
Every one of them did. I received something from every child I had, from part of their personality and working with them and the love that we had for each other. I love my children, and I think almost all of them love me.
And do you think that was probably the biggest paycheck you got out teaching? Was there any certain reason you got into teaching school?
Well, my family was poor, very, very poor right there in Depression times, and there was even four Depression times. There wasn't any money. Nobody had any money, and you ate well. You had a nice home. You had everything that made you really rich. But not with no money. There wasn't any money. So I got a scholarship when I graduated from high school. And I'll show you my graduating class. 36 freshmen started. Six of us graduated. That's how
six
tough our...
36.
Wow.
And you couldn't even find me on there, I bet you.
What an accomplishment, wasn't it? Just to graduate.
My husband graduated with me, too. That was one of the greatest things, my husband.
Carl, you and Carl graduated in the same class?
Yeah.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah. We were in from the eighth grade on, Carolyn.
But that's you right there, isn't it?
No, that wasn't me. That's.
I know, because I've seen
that. That wasn't me.
That's
me.
She had that resque haircut.
The short
and that
hair.
Was my husband, Carl.
This one's your husband?
Uh-huh. So I got a scholarship to go to Hanover.
Uh-huh.
So I went to Hanover College, and I did real well there.
It's a good school.
How much did it cost you, Florence?
Well, I think after the scholarship, the first year's tuition was about $86.
Oh,
my lunch costs more than that, I think.
Well, I tell you what, I got my room to stay in for $1.50 a week.
Oh, wow.
My room stay in $1.50 a week, and I took food from home. My mother fixed me food, and Carl's mother fixed me food. And Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, now, I ate like a king, but on Thursday and Friday, it got pretty slim.
I know how that is.
Now, you weren't married in college. You got married after college, didn't you?
We got married before the first year was out.
How many years did it take you to finish?
I only had to do 2 years then.
Yes.
And then, of course, later I got the rest of my teaching from... training from IU.
Mm-hmm.
Rest my credits from IU.
You taught such a long span from the 30s into the 70s. And this kind of this question's really for me. I study history at school, and there's a lot of events that happened. You had World War II and the Korean War and Vietnam and President Kennedy getting killed. Were there any historical events that affected your students, you thought, or affected the school day?
Well, the most important one was when Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. I think that got to everybody.
Could you see a difference in your students from that year?
For a while, I just saw a sort of a look of fear in their eyes for a little while, because our boys, you know, there the whole ship was sunk, and all the people were so many people were killed and everything, Well, you know how we would feel if it would happen today. That's how we felt then. But I think that's then when JFK was killed. That was another time. Those two times were the most outstanding.
How did it, I guess more so the war, because it was over a longer period of time, but how did that impact the students' grades? Did it at all, or did it make them work harder, or were they more concerned about the war than with school?
We sang a lot of songs. We sang songs for the Air Corps and the Army and the Navy. We sang all of those songs, and we were patriotic. We were loving our country more and more thinking more of our boys, of course. We were thinking of our boys and praying for their safety is all that the good Lord could say for us. And of course, during the war, that's what you think about. But when you get in the schoolroom with your children and you have your lesson plans made out as to what you're going to do for the day, after you first talk to them a little while about other things and you get into what you're doing, all those other things leave you. You have to push those out to do your work.
So would you consider that to be a pretty trying situation?
Yes, it was, and of course, you know, we were rationed on different things, and people wanted sugar and couldn't get it.
What was one of the most trying situations of your career? I'm sure you had many.
Well, I think during the war, when my brothers were in the service, I had four brothers in the service, and I lost one of them, and I had them in my heart and mind, but all the time, and grieved for the one that was missing in action, and then grieved for him after they said he was had been killed, and thought about my brothers, other three brothers. But when I went in the classroom with my children, I forgot it. I forgot it while I was in there with them because I had to give what I had to my children.
I've got a couple more questions. This is going back to teaching again. How would you define a good teacher or an effective teacher? What does a person need to do to be good?
Well, I think a good teacher is one that first has self-respect and respect for others, and expects the people to try to do the best that they can for you, and you give the best that you have to them, and then you expect them to give that back to you. And I think a good teacher has discipline. I really don't think there's any teaching that's worth anything where there is no discipline.
That's true. How did you see the discipline change over the years, the school's policy on it?
I think it's fallen down because of not respecting others. and not respecting themselves enough not to do the things that they know they shouldn't do. And when a teacher is going to demand such and such from you, and you can tell by the look in your eyes, and whether you're pleased or pleased or not. And all the teachers that I've known over here have all had wonderful discipline. We've had hardly ever had many, I guess, disciplinary problems, because the children had wonderful parents. Wonderful parents in the first place, and grandparents that loved them, and good bus drivers that took care of them to and from school, and I just think we had a wonderful school over here at Lexington.
Well, then, how did the administrators, how was your relationship with them, your principal and school board and so on?
Well, it was always good. It was always good because I tried to do what I knew I should do. There were some, of course, that I liked better than others.
Did you find them helpful a lot of times, or not so helpful, some of them?
Yeah, they were all pretty helpful, but and came right to your side if you needed them, you know. And Mr. Langdon from Austin, he was a marvelous, marvelous principal. All of our principals were good, and they expected you to do a good job.
What was one of the worst, I wanted to ask.
Go ahead.
What was one of the worst discipline problems that you ever had, if you can remember?
One of the worst discipline problems I had was a little feller that was... He and his another boy, or two of them together in the same class, and they were welfare children, and one lady kept them both, and she was crazy about one of them, and she didn't like him much, and it just had cut him down to the bone, and so he needed attention so much because he needed somebody to care about him. And he did. He caused me trouble. He'd be noisy once in a while or something, you know, but nothing like they do today. Nothing like they do today.
What would have happened to the kids? What would have happened to kids if they tried to pull some of the things that they do today? If they tried to pull that when you were teaching, what would have happened to them?
Well, the worst thing I ever didn't know of that happened over here to our school was that... Mr. Miller, he was the principal at that time, and maybe that was during the time Helen Hall was the principal, and he was teaching, and he was the basketball coach. He took that over as one of his duties. He never had coached before, and he was a fine man, and he expected discipline of the boys, and all of them went to you. I'll tell you that they thought he was good, because he really did a good job with all of them. But one boy, one time, I don't know what he did. I never did even try to find out. But Mr. Miller just picked him up bodily. But they said, I never saw it happen, and carried him down through the hall and took him out the door and told him, said, don't you ever come back here. That's the worst thing I ever didn't know I've ever happened over there.
Well, did he ever come back, or did he not come back?
I don't think he did. I don't think he did.
So they didn't put up with it.
But he was in high school, you know. That boy was in high school.
So his problem was solved then, I guess.
What forms of discipline did they use?
Oh, yeah. Did you ever use the paddle or...
I sure did. I was on playground duty, and we had when you're on playground duty, you take care of all the first grade, second grade, third grade, you know, fourth grade, whatever's out there, you take care of. You're on playground duty. So I was on playground duty, and we had just got through telling the children that we were so proud that the floors had all been scrubbed and waxed, and they were so pretty and shiny and clean. And it was rained and rained and rained and rained like today. And so it came on over the intercom, said, now, you know it's raining bad outside, and said, if you play outside, said, be sure that you stay on the tarvi and the sidewalks. Says, don't get out in the mud, because the rest of the playground, you know, is so wet. And it really had rained an awful lot. So we just got, teachers had just got through telling all the children to be sure now and stay on the sidewalks and the tarvi. And I had to see about somebody needed a little attention just before I got out there. And when I got out there, well, here was about six little boys. Oh, the cutest things. I wish I'd had a picture of them. Sweetest thing you ever saw in your life. They had a hold of hands, and they were walking right through that great big puddle as big as this room. Whack, quack, quack, whack. Water just splashing up. So I went out to it, and I said, now, I said, you little fellas, I said, you heard what we told you, that you weren't supposed to be out here. And didn't want you getting your feet wet and getting a bad cold and getting our classroom floors all muddy. I said, now you heard and you knew. I said, now you come up here and sit on these steps. We used to have the old schoolhouse steps out there. Come up here and sit on these steps now until I tell you you can get up. Well, they went, you know, and they all of them sat down, but two didn't want to sit down. So I gave them a hard look, and so one of them thought, well, maybe he better sit down. And so I went back, and the other one's still standing up, and I went back and took a hold of his hand, and I said, now, I told you to sit down until I... And when I turned around to go back, I heard him say, you don't know whether my feet's wet or not. Oh, I tell you, that makes me so mad. You can see the water squashing up out of his boots. I said, come with me. So I took him into his teacher in second grade. He's in the second grade. He wasn't in my class. I said, Mrs. Judd, I said, where is your, may I have your paddle? Oh, Mrs. Miller, I don't have a paddle. I said, well, I don't need one. So I laid him right across my lap. And I hiked his little old bottom. Till, well, it hurt my hand worse than did his bottom, because he had protection. He had his jeans and his underwear. I didn't even. And Santa sat down and just about cried. But that little fella knew who it was after that.
Didn't mess with you anymore. Oh, man. Well, I think that's about all the questions I have, though.
Well, I want to see these pictures that you brought.
Yeah, let's look at the pictures.